You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, welcome to Built for the Stage podcast. This is Joe Roscoe, founder of Built for the Stage, Broadway's number one fitness platform. If you want to try a free trial, go to the website builtforthestage.com or click the link in the description of this episode and you can work for 7 days with your own Broadway fitness coach on an online app. So check it out. No catch, no gimmicks. BuiltForTheStage.com. If you like Built for the Stage podcast, please rate, subscribe, and leave a comment. It'd be greatly appreciated. All right, please enjoy this conversation.
So tell me about the difference between Nicole Kidman movie Moulin Rouge and your Moulin Rouge on the stage.
Wow. Okay. Well, I think for me, the biggest difference is that I really find that this version of Moulin Rouge, you really see through Satine's journey.
Okay.
The movie, you care so much about Christian. You care so much about his journey. You care so much about him and what he's going through. And that's where I think that cinematic narration, I think, really does a really super fine job. And what's amazing is that when you narrate a show, you see very quickly that this person has come out on the other side of things. Very quickly. But you're still invested in his journey. But what you don't get to see is you don't get to see Satine on the other side until we get to the end of the show.
Yeah.
So you take this trip with her and you get to see the flip side of Moulin Rouge that I think no one really ever expected or saw in the theater.
What is Moulin Rouge about?
Moulin Rouge is about these bohemian ideals and these two people being in one place at one time that fall in love desperately and hopelessly, and they have these crazy odds against them. She has a sickness that is terminal and is going to take her life, and I think everybody knows that. And he doesn't know that he lives in this blissful existence about just falling in love and loving hard and fast and not being ashamed and just knowing that your time is super precious on this planet and this earth, and that these two people go for something that people say that they can't have. And I think that there's no greater thing to fight for, I think, than a love of another person.
Hey, there you go.
So if that's going to be what you fight for, you fight for it until the end.
Yeah.
And that's what they do. And it's just such a beautiful journey of love and acceptance and devotion, and I think it's really, and dance. It's you get to see so much of
your dance captain in the show, right?
Yeah, so I'm the assistant dance captain.
You literally have a football team for an ensemble. There's 26, 7, how many of you?
There are 29 of us on stage, and then we have a swing population that is I feel like it's only growing in numbers, but we have we have a standby, we have two female fucking swings that are rock stars, we have two onstage male covers that cover Ziedler and Christian and the Duke, and we have three offstage male swings right now. We'll have four a little bit later in the game, and we'll get a third female swing. It's just, we have a rough and tumble team. It's incredible.
Do you need, because you're still kind of fresh into the previews, do you guys still need name tags backstage for each other? Because there's so many of you.
No, what's crazy?
There's
so many of us, but a lot of us have been on this 2-year journey I think that a lot of people don't realize. We have been a family. It's not just a new family for Broadway. We've been a family for 2 years almost.
Right. Boston, right?
Yeah. Well, no, we did. So the journey started in March of 2017.
Yeah.
when a group of us got together, when Sonia asked us to get together to so that she could audition for the process.
Okay.
And in doing that, she got a group of us together, and out of that group, there are four people that made it into the show.
And you were one of them.
And I was one of them. Yeah. It's amazing.
So amazing.
Yeah, it's so cool. But like, and then from building a bigger family, when we did the lab, we got a full cast together.
Yeah.
And that's kind of when our family kind of began. And we did that. Then 6 months later, we did Boston. Mm-hmm. And then a year later, we are finally here on Broadway. It's crazy. It's been this crazy journey.
Did it seem, not effortless, but was the path smooth? Or did it seem like, oh, are we going to make it to Broadway? Is the show going to really happen?
No, there was never any doubt that the show was not coming to Broadway.
Okay.
Like, it was from the moment, I think, that we had our first, like, professional read-through. There was a group of us that did a 29-hour reading.
Okay.
Before we did the lab. And from that moment, it was very clear that they had every intention of bringing this to Broadway. And then when I tell you, when we had a load-in of like $150,000 of like lights and moving parts for our lab, and then when we saw the set, we were like, we're going to Broadway. That's like what we're doing.
The set is crazy.
The set is insane. The set I refer to it as our second largest company member.
Uh-huh.
So we have like the cast, and then we have the set that Derek McLean has built that is just, it's a monster.
Does the plot take you in different locations, or do you pretty much stay in the same place the whole time?
You are taken to a few different places. You're taken to all around Paris, but you're taken to like really intimate locations. So we start in the Moulin Rouge, and most of the story takes place within the confines of that, in that little world. It's like its own little like cellular place. Then we have the Garret that is like Lautrec's home, that a lot of more intimate conversations kind of happen, but that takes us out and into like a different world, but still in Montmartre, which is this like crazy artist like place, kind of like the East Village in a way. And then we have traveled to Satine's dressing room at one point in time, so you get to see the inside of the elephant, which is cool.
Yes.
That you see kind of in the movie, and the Derek has created this amazing theatrical version of that. And then we're taken kind of to the streets of Paris, where like you finally, for the first time, which I think is so clever, you get to see like the bright color. It's the first time we change color. So like it's the first time you get to see like pastels and colors and all these new rich things, not just red and gray.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so those are kind of our like areas that we get to like play with and explore within the world of the show.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
It's awesome. How long or what has been going on since Kinky Boots? What happened in between now and then?
I didn't have a lot of time. I had 5 weeks, and I am a crazy workaholic. Mm. And I knew that if I wasn't going to exit New York, I would have like stayed here and tried to work.
Sure.
I would have picked up any work. I would have been like, I'll dance for you. I'll sing for you. I'll do this reading for you. I would have done anything. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't had a really substantial break, which I knew that you had have work on the other side. To have that as an artist is so cool and sometimes such a luxury that you forget that like you could enjoy this little baby break. So I took my fiance to Paris. So we went to Paris.
I saw the picture of you in front of the actor.
Yeah, so he had never gone. And I took him to the Moulin Rouge. Mm-hmm. We got set up. We saw the show. Mm-hmm. We had champagne. We had, like, we stayed there for, like, a week almost.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to, like, show him around. I lived there in 2012. I did West Side Story at the Châtelet in Paris. And so I got to take him around. I got to show him where I lived for these 6 months, which was insane. And so then we came home and I was home for 4 days, and then we went to Mexico.
Okay.
Paris to Mexico.
Duh. I mean, where else would you go next after going to...
It was, like, kind of cold in Paris, so it was nice to have, like, a real beach. And that was our, like, educational vacation is what we've called it.
Yeah.
And then we went to Mexico. Then I came home, and then I went and saw my mom, my dad. My dad lives in a place called Gardnerville in, like, Nevada, near Lake Tahoe. Like, yeah. Right outside of Lake Tahoe.
Okay.
And then my mom lives in Myrtle Beach, so my mom and my sister both lived there, so I went to Myrtle Beach.
Mm.
And got to see them.
Hey. The Chanticleers.
Come on.
Did we talk about this?
No, we haven't talked about this. No, uh-uh.
Anyways, not,
but my mom. But my mom retired there. So I went there, hung out on the beach for a couple of days, and then came home, and we started rehearsal.
So basically your time in between was a vacation.
Yeah, my time is
amazing.
Yeah, and it's something I like never really give myself chance or the opportunity.
You're a workaholic, like you said.
100%. Like, I like working. I enjoy doing projects. I like creating things, and the more that I can do, the better most of the time. But then I forget how exhausted and tired I am, and I've tried more than not to listen to that and take a break when I need to take a break. So, yeah.
Hey, Thor.
Hi, buddy.
Hey, new guy. Back to Moulin Rouge.
Yeah.
What character do you play as a part of the ensemble?
So, as a part of the ensemble, I play a bunch of different, like, little things. You kind of, every little situation is a little bit different. Like, I, at one point, inside of the Moulin Rouge, I am one part of a twin.
Right, I see those pictures. Yeah.
Yeah. So me and Benji Rivera, who is a great friend of mine, him and I kind of got chosen to be this, like, kind of fetishy sort of, like, I don't know, I refer to us as, like, the twins from The Shining sometimes.
Okay.
Because, like, we walk, our pre-show is we walk around and kind of, we are linked in arms and we just walk around and kind of stare out and are these, like, ghostly kind of creatures. We just kind of create ambiance.
As people are coming into the house.
As people come into the house, the Moulin Rouge is already in full effect.
Kind of like I feel like Moulin Rouge is a little bit of, like, a cabaret meets Chicago. Is that fair?
In its own, I guess, kind of in its own way, that there is not a lot of a fourth wall.
Right. Yeah.
Like, in that sense, it doesn't ever really exist because we have a passerelle that brings you out into the audience that, like, and that's the whole point of the Moulin Rouge, is that it's accepting and that it's inviting and that it pulls you in. So the more that we do that does that, I think, is more of the purpose of our show. It's not just you sit down and watch, you sit down and experience the show that we're doing. So I do that, and I play a patron to the Moulin Rouge. I also play a couturier, which is, like, one of my most favorite things that I get to do in the show. We are the servants to the Duke, almost. We take Satine in and out of... We pretty much dress her up to fit into society in a really cool way, and we do it on stage. Mm-hmm. But those costumes are my favorite costumes in the whole show.
Okay.
Yeah, they're amazing. They're these beautiful blue costumes that, like, have corsets attached to the jackets, and they're incredible. And then we also play like a regular normal person inside the Moulin Rouge in our rehearsal scene. We have, like, a rehearsal scene that's Bad Romance that you get to see kind of, like, the show that we're creating inside of the show that we're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, so a little bit more of, like, the journey.
Also, like,
oh, tell me.
Go for the Stage is also, like, really getting these arms together.
Let's go.
Not as big, but
tank top.
Got
your tank top.
I've had a lot of people come up to me recently and say, "Oh, are you working out right now?"
Yeah.
I mean, also, I'm doing when I tell you that I refer to doing Moulin Rouge, at least for myself, as like doing CrossFit and like high intensity interval training on top of doing these workouts, like my body has never been better. It's been insane. So before your body never, there's Moulin Rouge right there.
Hey!
So I want to get that right there.
Hey!
Moulin Rouge!
Hey!
So the journey to here and your two Broadway shows previously was Finding Neverland, right? Your debut?
Yeah, so my debut was in Finding Neverland. It was a swing. And I had been a swing almost in every show I had ever done up to that point. And that show was kind of like doing like CrossFit in a way. Like we were lifting people, throwing people, lifting benches, lifting humans. It was climbing scaffolding, climbing ropes, hanging from one arm. Like it was a crazy show to swing. Mm-hmm. And then I did Kinky Boots, and that was a whole different experience, I think, for me when it came to fitness. Because I had never up to that point, I'm used to as a man being given like half a costume.
Okay. Yeah.
Like right. Being told here are your pants and you don't have a shirt on, or like I've been told that, but I experienced for the first time the way that I feel like all of my like female counterparts have always felt when they get their costumes for the first time. When I was handed a bikini for the first time and was like, you're going on stage in that. I was like,
oh,
cool. Okay. Well, then how was I able, to train my body to look the way that I wanted it to look by doing, I did a ton of yoga. I did a ton of like light weights. I did a lot of like Barry's boot camp. I like leaned myself out hardcore to do the show just so that I felt good in what I was wearing, but still that portion of like my fitness like life was going to yoga, was eating really differently, was like doing a lot of cardio to continue to stay kind of lean and thin.
Yeah.
And then for Moulin Rouge, I lost 17 pounds in Boston doing the show. It was like the craziest thing. I wasn't going to the gym. The show was so hard that I dropped 17 pounds. So my goal this time around, I pulled myself up to 205 pounds before we started. Like I just bulked my way up to 205 pounds by eating everything I wanted to eat for 5 weeks.
Yeah.
And then I've been able to kind of stay in the 190 area, like anywhere between 190 and 195.
Yeah.
By like working out, like lifting a little bit differently, and like being able to kind of put on a little bit more weight, where at Kinky Boots I was super self-conscious about it. Like,
yeah.
I was in a corset, I was a drag queen, it was a different aesthetic than this.
Yeah. So before all three of those shows and making the Broadway dream happen, what were some tough roads that you had to travel on?
Oh God, I think the toughest road for me to travel was the singing road.
Okay.
Like that put me through such an emotional journey. So when I got to the city in 2012, my agents pretty much in their own great way, but they told me I needed to stop dancing. They were like, dancing is not a problem for you. But if you need to put your money anywhere, you need to be able to sing. And I was living in Vegas before moving to New York. I started taking singing lessons, but I didn't know how much it would require of me to do and how much my career would depend on that. And if I wanted to do more than just dance, I needed to learn how to use my voice.
Yeah.
So that was my toughest. I remember I cried countless times in my like voice lessons. I didn't go to college for musical theater. I didn't go to college at all, but I didn't go to college for musical theater. So learning how to sing and not being good at something was so like ego shattering that I just refused to let it get the better of me. And I How'd you do that?
I took every piece of my money and I said, I'm going to do this for myself and the betterment of my career.
Is that just who you are? But or it was, what made you not say screw it?
Because this is what I do. I don't do anything else. Like, I don't want to do anything else. I'm not ever going to retire. Like, I have a retirement fund, but, like, I want to use that for, like, buying a house later on in life. This is what I will do. I want to be like Kelsey Grammer and Carolee Carmello, who I've worked with, and I want to be, like, Beth level. I want to be like all of these people who have had these long careers, that this is what they do. There's no stopping. I want to do this until I'm like Elaine Stritch. Like, I just want to be these people that constantly perform and constantly do this in every way, shape, and form for the rest of my life. So I think that when it really came down to, like, I need to learn how to do this, I just buckled down and did it. I took voice lessons once a week, every week, for almost 2 years, and learned on the job. My first musical that I ever did as an adult was West Side Story in 2012, and I just learned. And I took a lot of chances, and I figured out how to do it my own way, because that's been my career thus far. I've always just done it my own way, because everybody has their own personal journey. Yeah. So, and if a lot of people that don't go to college, you have to learn some way, and the best way to learn is on the job. So you fake it to get the job, got the job, and then you just eat up all of the knowledge that you possibly can get. I always say that I got my musical theater, like, associate's degree or, like, a BFA at Kinky Boots in the 3.5 years that I was there. I just remember asking the boys in that dressing room so many questions, like, about music and music theory and musical theater, and just trying to learn the way of the community. So, like, I felt like such a baby going into that group because I had always been around dancers.
Yeah, you danced with for Celine Dion show.
Celine Dion, like, Cirque du Soleil, like,
Vegas, a lot of stuff.
I've danced for Cher, I've danced for Tina, I've danced for, like, I've danced for Beth, like, I've danced for all these really cool, wonderful, like, women and artists, and I've done all these really, like, I've danced for Sonia for 20 years. Like, I've done so much dance in my life that Kinky Boots was the first time I was around people that don't call themselves dancers.
Right.
And I was, in a way, I felt like the odd man out, because they would talk about their musical theater experiences. And I remember asking what is the thing that colleges do that they bring all their graduating seniors?
Showcase.
Yes, I was like, I don't know what a showcase is. I was like, what is that? They're like, we're going to go, like, speak at our showcase and, like, our college. And I was like, what is that? I have no idea what that is. And then I went to one because I didn't know what it was. So my friend brought me to one. Like, it's just, yeah, I got my musical theater knowledge through just being in musical theater and learning what kind of musicals I want to do.
You probably taught them a lot, though, too.
I mean, I hope
they had that great musical theater background. Maybe they're a little bit more well-rounded overall, but the level of dance that you were at that point.
Yeah.
You know?
And also, like, learning how to sing with that group of boys was super intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
Like, being able to, like, hold my, like, part and my heart. It kind of validated me a lot as a singer getting into that show, because that show, yes, I had to dance. Yes, I had to do a back handspring and 4-inch heels, but those are things I do.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, singing a 3-part harmony and with people who sing the house down.
Yeah.
I don't do that. Mm-hmm. But I had to learn how to do that.
But you did?
Yeah, yeah. And over 3.5 years, they felt like my family. Like, and it felt like the right place. And I felt like after that show, I felt like I could conquer anything I wanted to. And without my voice being the way that it was, I probably wouldn't have gotten past Justin Levine for Moulin Rouge the way that I did. Like, it's all kind of, like, circumnavigated into the fact that, like, my voice now carries me just as much as my dancing doesn't.
Yeah. So I'm getting from it that, one, you gave yourself no choice. There was no plan B. Meaning, like, when the road got rough or the singing was tough to, like, put your ego aside.
No, I mean, my mom always said, if you have a backup plan, you're going to back up.
I've heard many of backup sayings, backup plan, but not that one.
Yeah, like, if you have one, you're going to eventually back up on it. Like,
well, the way I took it, though, the way you just said was, not only if you have a backup plan, chances are you're going to take it, you're going to do it.
Yeah.
But the literal saying of backing up,
yeah,
to move backward.
Yeah, and you're going to, like, take yourself away from a learning experience or an opportunity. Because you're going to literally back yourself. You're like, you're going to just say you're going to get to the door and you're going to be like, I actually can't do that. And you're just going to pull yourself right away from it and you're going to back up and you're going to close the door. And it probably will never open again. That's like what's really shitty about this and also really beautiful about this career and this thing, because opportunities don't come around really twice. And they just don't. Like, sometimes they do and sometimes they won't ever again. So you have to just take the opportunity, hold on, know that you have the skills and the ability to do what is asked of you, even if you don't necessarily believe it in yourself. Somebody has seen even a glimmer and they are asking you to be a part of an opportunity, and you have to trust yourself and your abilities that you'd be able to do it.
You have to allow yourself to succeed.
Yeah. You must. You have to. Or if not, you're just going to keep doing the same thing all the time because that doesn't scare you or frighten you or push you or make you want to be better. Like, it's just going to allow you to be super complacent.
Yeah.
And if that's what you want, then you can have that.
Yeah.
But if that's not what you want, like, you just keep walking through doors that continue to open for you.
And that'll do it with Frederick Odegaard. Thanks again, Fred, for coming on the podcast in the midst of your crazy schedule with Moulin Rouge. Go check out Frederick and Moulin Rouge as they're in previews right now and are set to open in just a few weeks. All right, once again, if you want to try that free trial, go to the website, builtforthestage.com, and fill out the contact form. Until next time, it's me, Roscoe, signing off.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.